When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Middle of draft season, we're moving on the offensive line. In fact, specifically the interior offensive line positions, guard and center. We talked about the offensive tackle positions on a recent show already, and included in that were some guys we think are probably moving to the inside. Joining me tonight, Jason of Huddle Up Films. We're going to talk through the offensive line prospects, try and put them in some kind of an order for you, and you can make your own decisions, obviously, from that. Jason, nice to have you here. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, Ken. Thank you.
Tell people about your work, where they can find it.
Sure. Pretty much I'm on YouTube and on Twitter, and I make a variety of videos, usually highlight videos, film study breakdowns, just try to mix it up a little bit on the channel. And I'm relatively new to social media. Haven't been on for a year quite yet, but I've had a great time doing the videos and interacting with people.
All right. Great stuff. He's very responsive on Twitter. Make sure you give him a follow, and you'll see why, I'm sure, by the end of this episode. So, Jason, interesting draft for interior offensive linemen. I think as much as any position, except maybe the defensive line, opt-outs and lost seasons have cost us a lot of viewing of the prospects at the top who might otherwise be in the second, third, fourth round in other years, that there aren't a lot of these small school prospects. There's one big one of note. We're going to get to him, but there's not much else.
It's very true. You know, I think that goes for all positions, but for the interior offensive line, especially. And it's what makes the draft a little bit challenging this year, but also a little fun. Mm-hmm. Because, you can see the mocks are all over the place. Opinions on players are all over the place. So that's the ramifications that we're dealing with now.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. And I think if I had to bet a couple bucks, I'd say this is a year where Eric DaCosta has an exceptional draft, given the Ravens' acumen with small school scouting. And that was really his baby during the Ozzie era, more than really anyone else I'm aware of. And I think this is a good year for the Ravens to accumulate some later picks. They probably get some real value in the later rounds.
Well, I agree. And that's something that every time I think I've seen DaCosta speak, he talks about relying on his area scouts, his connections, things like that. So without the combine, I mean, I'm a big fan of the combine just for the just to see them lined up next to each other, and then just all the events themselves, the build up and the off season lull. But, you know, being a Ravens fan, I am very confident. It makes you feel good that you have a true scout as a GM.
Yeah. Got some terrific, material that came out, particularly one, tweet today that graphed the AFC North draft picks of the last decade. I think it may have been going back to 2010 or might have been 2011, but it was basically a decade's worth of draft picks. And the Browns have a number of very early round draft picks that are well below the line of expectation for AV in career. It's projected for more recent draft picks. While as the Ravens, their late round picks have really shined. Their early round picks have also been very good. And you realize just how lucky this franchise is. And also, I think you probably develop a little more appreciation for the way the Ravens are patient on comp picks.
I do. And this year especially, I think, is going to be a really good year to trade back, accumulate picks because of the guessing game and that everyone's playing right now. And because opinions are all over the place, there may be guys that the Ravens are looking at, and I'm sure this happens every year, but more so this year, that they like, they know they like them more than other teams. And they're going to be able to pick them off in the mid to late rounds. I'm on team, I'm on team trade back. I just don't see any of the players at the top falling to the Ravens. I think that they're well-known consensus. You see them everywhere. There are only about 10 of them. So I would love to see DaCosta trade back somewhere in that third round and pick up an extra pick and then maybe manipulate the draft from there. And third and fourth rounds, I think, is where the real value is in this draft.
Yeah, there certainly is plenty of value there and at a lot of positions. In fact, I have a hard time filling the first round with the obvious players. And you mentioned after 10, maybe it's 15, but you know, I'm still hoping that a player like Christian Barmore, who probably goes in the top 15, might draft the Ravens at 27 somehow. Or that either of the top two corners, yeah, that's a real flyer, might drop to the Ravens. That would be honestly really pretty ridiculous if that happened. And then Trevon Merrig, I think, is a little bit more of a chance that he drops to the Ravens at 27. I think if he does, the Ravens probably take him.
Well, I agree with you. I heard you last year when you were talking about McKinney and the other safety. Grant Delpit. I would have loved to have either one of those two. And it's just, aside from being able to play dime, having two reliable starters, two reliable players at safety doesn't sit well with me. When the secondary is the strength of your team, right, you want to make sure you keep it that way. So, yes,
you mean having only two reliable players, and because they lucked out last year to get through the whole season, have those two back end guys hold up.
Extremely lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, if either one of those went down, I mean, they were reluctant to play Stone or even to have him on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And then Levine is good at what he does, but not a full-time safety. So yes, you know, needs aside, there are some very good players in this draft. The three corners that I like, if any one of them are there, you'd have to consider them as well as the guys you were speaking of there.
Who's your third guy? Newsom?
No.
Horn and Surtain are your first two?
And Farley. I mean,
Farley. That's a great one.
Top 5-10 pick, if not for the injury, and if any team can afford to be patient in the secondary is with a cornerback, it's him. If he sits out 5 games or pup list, hey, it's worth it if he's that good. He's the best player available. But
yeah, that's a real good point. The Ravens have a couple of positions, defensive line, corner, safety probably also falls into the same category, though I think they'll need that backup safety at some point this year. It's more likely than not, where they can really afford to wait a year and have a 1 year developmental prospect near the top of their draft where they really get a value player.
Very true. And the offensive line, something that we haven't talked about, but if you look at the need there, it's going to be interesting to see how the Ravens play this because number one, we don't really know what's going on with Tyree Phillips, how they feel about him, mm-hmm. where they see him. Is he a swing tackle or is he a guard? And then you have Ben Bredesen, Makari, you have Balloon Castillo, and I'm missing somebody, Ben Powers. Ben Powers. So you have four guys basically that you could fit into one spot because you'll have Bozeman and Zeitler starting. So how do the Ravens attack the inside offensive line? Do they need somebody? Do they want to upgrade? Do they want to say, hey, we're comfortable with the guys that we have? Do we want to pick a developmental guy that we can stash? So as far as the inside offensive line, it's one of the most intriguing positions of the draft.
Yeah. I'd be more in favor of taking a developmental offensive lineman, but I think it probably at this point, it's more important that they get a tackle. We don't know what Stanley's situation is. They may actually trade Brown on draft day if the tackle that they think will fit is available at the time of the trade.
Right.
So, you know, a realistic thing I think we would say is that if the Chiefs are on the clock at number 31, they may say, trade us Orlando Brown and we'll give you the pick at 31 and one other later. And, you know, we'll take our chances with Brown and we end up with a player like Leatherwood or Tevin Jenkins or somebody like that.
Could definitely see it happening. So inside offensive line or the interior of the offensive line, you know, it's been a weak spot. The last three playoff losses, our offensive line overall has been outplayed. So it's a very delicate balance between, hey, we have two really good guys, Zeitler and Bozeman, that we believe in. We have these other four or five guys that we've invested time in that we kind of believe in. Do we want to replace them? Do we want to add another average talent to the mix, or do we want to go developmental? So I'm fascinated by that part of the draft, and I really want to know what their plans are for Phillips. I would love to know how they feel about him and where they see his future, because that's going to determine their strategy there as well.
That's right at the heart of it. And obviously they have to make a decision on Bozeman in terms of a long-term deal. I would have hoped this would got done this offseason, and it still might, but they have other players in years one and two that if you go in and draft up either you draft a player who you're giving a starting job to, meaning the first couple of rounds, or they go out and they get another guy in free agency and give him a job, they're really cutting a couple guys out of jobs, you know, making them backups at this point when, you know, you're at those cheap labor years where, boy, you wish you could harvest that value.
Right. And the, you know, Phillips was a third round pick, Bredesen mm-hmm. a fourth. So it's draft capital too. It's not just, you know, Macari was undrafted, but there's a lot of time and effort and resources spent into the guys that are already on the roster.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's get right to the interior offensive line 10 minutes into the show.
But sure,
we'll get right to the interior offensive line. Can't help ourselves sometimes talking about the grand strategy. We'll do this in 1 to 10 fashion. So you start with your number one guy, and then I'll go and fill in if I have a different guy.
Well, I haven't heard your tackle show, so I'm not sure if he appeared on this. But Elijah Vera Tucker, number one interior offensive lineman. Surefire first rounder, in my opinion. I don't think the Ravens are going to have a chance at him. He's just very steady, and he brings a lot of value. The thing I liked about him is I got to see him play left guard last year when Austin Jackson was still on the team, and then you got to see him play left tackle this year, and there aren't a lot of bad snaps out there for him. His athletic scores are off the chart. I mean, he gets knocked for his run blocking, and he's not a people mover, but he did 36 on the bench. I mean, great number there, but silky smooth at the second level, very consistent. His anchor's good enough. He's just an overall athlete. He moves like a tight end to me, Ken. Looks like a tight end.
There's a lot to like. The short arms are the big drawback that are going to keep him from playing tackle, even though he played reasonably well there at USC last year. Did allow several sacks, and the sack total that you'll see in a PFF report is going to understate just how many sacks he really contributed to. But that's okay. He was out of position, clearly, playing with very short arms. The 36 reps on the bench to me is not as impressive as some other players because of the arm length concern, but it's still good. I mean, no doubt about it. It's a good number. Just because a guy has 35-inch arms and he does 24 reps, most of the time I'm saying that's not terrible. But this 36 reps is still above that. But it's good. What I liked a lot about how he identified the correct guy to pick up on the blitz and how he is in the right position on stunts and plays like that. He does his handoff quickly and he gets back into position. And it's a smooth A to B transition. It's not a, oh my God, no. And then get back to his position.
Right.
He seems to know what he's doing.
No, he does a really good job of staying square to whoever's across from him. If he gets beat initially, he's for a guy that's built well all the way around, he's not stiff at all. So, yes, the short arms are going to hurt him at left tackle. That's why I was glad to see a couple of games of him at left guard in 2019, because that's where he's going to ultimately settle in. However, I do believe if you need him for a couple of games, he can handle his own the left side without too many problems, especially if you have a guy like Lamar where, you know, is mobile enough. If you get a piece of the defender, Lamar can still make something happen off schedule. So, but yes, number one interior offensive lineman, and I think he'll go probably before pick 20. He started slipping into the mid-20s. That's a guy the Ravens would maybe trade up for, but I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't think it's absolutely impossible he drops to 27. Call me,
really?
You know, okay. a fanatical about this, but it's not like the guy does not have other questions about him. And there are a lot of people who need interior offensive linemen, but I haven't heard it said that he's an obvious developmental center at this point. I'm not saying it can't happen, but you know, he's already shown some positional versatility. That's good. Obviously, all the stunt handoffs and knowing who to pick up in the blitz, that's exactly a center's responsibility,
right,
in the NFL. So there's reasons to believe it. There's the other thing to believe is that his arms are short even for a guard. And so if I think he'd have a lot of trouble playing right guard in a right-handed system where the three tech is going to face him a lot.
So I'm sorry. I was going to say I have 32 1/8 for his, yeah, for his arms.
Right.
So it's below average. There's no two ways around it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were mentioning the twists and stunts, that's really where I saw him shine, the communication and how easily he can move laterally. If somebody crosses his face, he's there blink of an eye. And that kind of athleticism, especially for the Ravens, if you're looking to move Bozeman to center and you want a left guard that can move laterally up to the second level, this is your guy. I don't think we necessarily need a people mover as much as we need a mover at that left guard position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go on with your number two guy, and I'll chime in. That's Elijah Vera Tucker, also my number one.
Did you want to give your number two? Or?
No, it's you're, okay, you're the guest. Please, you go first.
Okay, thank you. Well, Landon Dickerson, it's going to be hard to keep this man down. Now, I saw a draft or a mock draft last night where he was in the third round. Mm-hmm. When you talk about him, it's obviously all about his injuries. I have him at age 22. He's played 5 seasons, and 4 of them ended in injuries. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge risk. I mean, this is the ultimate risk-reward prospect in the draft, I think. If you get him and he's healthy, it doesn't get much better as far as his physicality. He wants to finish people. He has a little bit of range, but he plays very under control within what you ask him to do. Technically sound. There's not a lot of lunging. He's got a really good pad level for a guy that's 6'6", 326. Mm-hmm. His hands, almost 10.5 inches. He gets a hold of you. That shows up on tape, too. And he gets you in the vice grips. You're not going anywhere. And I saw some positive blocks on screen passes. I watched the Mississippi State game and the Missouri game. I mean, there's really, this is a complete player, and he can play center. You saw his charisma doing cartwheels at the pro day, wanted to come support his teammates. Everything you hear about him is positive, 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 which isn't a surprise. But when you keep hearing it over and over again from different sources, you tend to believe it. And he's just a player that I like a lot. It's a risk reward. If people take him off their board, I can understand that. If they want him as their number one interior offensive lineman and take him in the first round, I can understand that too. So,
okay. I do not have him as high, but he is one of 6 guards, and not everybody will have these guys as guards, that I think will go in the second round. And so we're going to get to all of them in just a second. He's my number 4 guy. I think the injury history probably has to play a little bit of a stronger element there. He is obviously ridiculously oversized for the position. His length is a little bit lacking. It's similar at 32 1/4 inches to Vera Tucker. But it's the injury history that would hold him back. I think he'll be effective on any of the normal guard and center blocks that the Ravens ask. I don't think he's going to have a real big problem pulling. It's not the strongest thing in his game, but the Ravens' pulls are not real complex, and Bozeman, frankly, is just not a outrageous athlete in terms of his ability to pull. If Landon Dickerson's asked to do some of those things, I think he can do it. Or, you know, another possibility is that Landon Dickerson ends up at center with those arms. It's not an impossibility. I like his ability to hold the back end of a double team and finish it. Whereas, Matt Burke was exceptional at that. If you think back to some big blocks in Ravens history and you want to go back and look at one, look at the Ray Rice 83-yard touchdown run and look at the way Matt Burke finishes off Yanda's pin and turn on Vince Wilfork.
Okay,
and Vince
yeah.
Wilfork's having to explain it on the sideline. He's talking about this, and the coaches are right in his ear, and he's like, I don't want to discuss this any further. It's actually funny to watch. There are two great combination blocks on that play, but go back. It's a fun thing to watch. I'm not telling you. I'm really telling the people in the audience to do this. I know you probably watched it 100 times, right?
I have, and I knew the game you were talking about right away in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That was a jump off the couch moment for sure.
It was great. My number two guy I'll give you is Jackson Carman out of Clemson, because he's a guy a lot of people have at tackle. I don't think he's going to stick there. Again, it's arm length related, but there's a lot of people in the same category. Got that ideal size at 6'5", 317, except for 32.5-inch arms. That's not going to cut it as an NFL tackle. He plays very violently with his hands. When you have shorter arms against really long three techs that you might have to face, or other guards who just get to the body with one arm sometimes, you're going to have a lot of trouble unless you have those kind of violent hands that you play with. I think he'll have a bigger impact on the run game and has terrific pad level, that pad level you really love. I can't tell you how much that pad level matters as the second block on a double team, or even the guys being left behind, or the guy who goes to level two. If you go to the guy's ribs on that double team, terrific guy. Now, always, low always wins, so it's always good, but low on the double teams, really underrated in terms of value. I love him for that. And he's a guy I'd really be thrilled if the Ravens could get at 58. I wouldn't be bad with it if they traded down to the middle of the second round to pick him up.
Now, I had him a little lower on my list, but it's a hodgepodge. And not only are his hands violent, like you said, they're also very quick. His initial move off the snap is ridiculously good. Excuse me. And he also, like Vera Tucker, has a really good sense of blitz pickup, combos. Even on screen passes, he gets out there, checks his guy quickly, makes sure it's done, gets out there. A really good player. We differ on the rankings, but there's really not a lot to argue about. I did miss him on pro day, though. I would have loved to seen him get out there, but apparently he was nursing a back injury, a mysterious mm-hmm. type. There's didn't miss any games, I don't believe, but he just wasn't healthy enough to get out there and show out.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to evaluate that, but I would agree. All the six guys I've got in round two, very close in a pack. If they all went within 10 picks, it wouldn't shock me with a run on guard, say, in the second round.
I shuffled those back and forth a few times, yes. So.
Who's your number three guy?
My number three guy is Creed Humphrey out of Oklahoma. And Ken, I wanted to ask, you're on the show, put you on the spot, but do you mm-hmm. remember a left-handed center in the league? Or is Creed going to be the first? I can't imagine he'd be the first
one. Don't know.
It
does matter for punch. We've heard the stories of Marshall Yanda moving him from right guard to left guard because of his shoulder injury and needing
right.
to protect the inside. But I don't really know left-handed, right-handed centers. And centers, it does matter because you would see it snapping the ball, but I really don't know.
Yeah, it just got me thinking when I saw that. I couldn't think of one off the top of my head. And I'm like, well, maybe Ken would know that.
You're concerned about rotation of the football? Because I know sometimes they bring in a left-footed punter.
I tend to overthink things. So yes, that was one of the things. And then, like you mentioned, Yanda was a good example. But yes, exactly where people are set up and how that affects them. But I tell you what, he's very well rounded technically. His athletic score, he scored a 10, which I quite frankly I didn't see that on tape. I saw an above average athlete, but you're talking about a perfect the highest relative athletic score in the draft. Very high floor. I think if you draft Creed Humphrey, you're getting a player that's going to play for a long time. And main issue is his length, as most of these guys. But 2-year team captain, very high floor, guard flexibility, 3-year starting center.
Yeah, I think you want to make him your center and forget about it if you pick him, because that really maximizes his value for his size. It's not like he'd be undersized for a guard, but he's not of a special size like he is at center at 6'4", 312. I first watched him when he was playing with Ben Powers, And he had a little bit of trouble, and he was absolutely a mammoth prospect going to Oklahoma. It was one of their really big catches. But if I recall correctly, he was starting as a true freshman, and the other four were, I believe, all going to the NFL after that year. I might not be right, but I believe it was all of them. Maybe not. Maybe Brown or somebody was a year away. I'm trying to remember exactly the term. I guess Brown would have come the year before Powers, right?
Yeah, I know Brown and Powers played next to each other. Where yeah. Brown was the left.
Powers
left
the left guard. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you got me thinking. That's something I'll have to look up.
All right. So we'll look at that Oklahoma offensive line. But one of the things I did notice was he had some footwork issues at that time, including a trip of Powers on a pull, where I was really looking at it, and that's not a good thing. But Creed Humphrey was an unbelievable player, even as a freshman. I think he'd do exceptionally well again with the Ravens' double team system. I think you could move him to guard if you had to. This is not a Ravens team, I think, that would have to sacrifice their center to get a guard. I think it's more likely to go the other direction, that they need to move a guy from guard to center. So, I like the guy. He's my number five guy overall. It's a very crowded and very deep field. He is one of the guys I mentioned on the radio as a guy I would not want the Ravens reaching for at 27. I think that'd be a massive reach. If they get him at 58, I love it. If they even have to trade back and get him at around 50, I love that too. But 27 is too much of a reach.
You know, and the guys we're speaking about now is one of the reasons that I am on team trade back. Mm-hmm. These guys, like you said, Creed Humphrey would probably be a reach at 27, at least in my opinion. But at 40, 45, 50... you're going to be happy with that pick. It's plug and play center from day one.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in agreement on that. Okay, let me move on to my number three guy, which is Ben Cleveland of Georgia. One of the biggest human beings you can imagine at 6'6", 354, 33-inch arms, so that meets the standard for a guard. Still has very good mobility, as timed by the Georgia Pro Day officials, I assume, at 485 on the 40. He's a finisher. Now, this is something we had from a lot of players you see in their rookie years, at least. Orlando Brown, I remember him pushing a guy into the sidelines against Carolina. That was very fun. Drew a penalty. Michael Orr, when he first got on the football field for Baltimore, he looked like he was headed for a Hall of Fame career at right tackle before he got his mind messed up around moving to left tackle and then couldn't do that well and couldn't do anything well after that. But anyway, Ben Cleveland really finishes blocks, loves to do it, and you like to have for a team that's going to run the ball 45 to 50 times in some games, you want to have a guy who finishes blocks and makes everybody else not want to line up against him.
I mean, he looks like Thor. I mean, he's... Mm-hmm. He's just a tremendous athlete. There's no bad weight on him. 6'6", the 350s. And what I really liked about him, too, which surprised me, aside from everything that you said that I agree with, is how good he is in pass protection, how fluid he is with his hands, very consistent hand placement, his timing of his punch. Everything is just under control. I really like this prospect a lot, too. I don't know if he would you consider him a right guard only?
No, I really wouldn't. I think you could start either place. If he does end up at right guard, and that may be a natural place where he'd go after Zeitler is gone, then you can set your system up there. But you leave him at left guard. You let him pull. I mean, the athletic scores are off the charts. He can do it at his kind of mobility. If he can't do it at a 485 40, I don't know who can. He's got to learn to pull out. He's got to be quick off that snap. But the Ravens have done a very good job with getting their centers to have better footwork in the post Flynn era.
Okay.
They had a lot of problems with it back in that era. Bowler got tripped up a lot. It's hard to really say whether it's Bowler or Anthony Wright, but it was really both of them getting tripped up. Kedrick Vincent was also on the team at the same time. And there's one famous play where both the center and the right guard both stepped on Anthony Wright's foot on the same play, one foot each.
I don't remember that. it's tough to make a pass like that.
Yes, it was. He went down pretty quick. So anyway, I'd be excited about getting him. Some of the things you hear about Cleveland, too, about the polish in L2, I'm not really concerned about that with the Ravens coaching. That's the kind of thing they fix. They get people to keep on their feet. And a guy like him who wants to finish blocks, the key for him is just going to be, you just be a positional blocker. get up there, keep your feet. There's not anyone who can get by you if you can get your hands on him and you can keep your feet. If you lunge at him, that's you giving him a chance.
Yeah, he's an enormous human, technically sound. I do think his feet are a little slow, methodical, but it's hard to complain with. I mean, he would be a great fit, too.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
All right. You'd be happy if the Ravens shockingly moved him and got him at 27. How upset would you be?
Pretty upset.
Okay.
Because I mean, not to say it like that, but there are other options. I mean, the guys we talked about already. I mean, are they all gone at 27? I definitely don't want someone ranked in the middle of my, or, you know, a fifth ranked offensive lineman.
Fair inside. Enough.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, yeah. But you still got him in the second round anyway, I assume, right? Because, well, I have five guys in the second round. Maybe you got them in the third. I don't know. Give me your number four guy then.
Well, my number four guy is Quinn Meinerz.
Okay.
This is where, you know, he's just a phenomenal and phenomenally interesting player, probably the most intriguing guy in the draft. And you talk about his Senior Bowl standout. There's just not a lot of tape. At least I don't have access to it going to University of Wisconsin Whitewater.
He's only played a handful of games in 3 years. I don't know what use it would do to watch games from when he was 18 at this point.
Yeah, exactly. But watching him at the Senior Bowl, which, of course, the Ravens put a lot of stock into, I mean, he just stepped in there and then, you know, dominated. He didn't just hold his own. He dominated a good amount of snaps. And then the most shocking thing to me is how he tested. I mean, he's known for his belly hanging out. He's on morning, you know, you see him training in Canada, blocking trees. And he comes out here, 32 vert, 33 bench. He's running a sub 540. I mean, the guy, and he has 33-inch arms, which is plenty good enough, excuse me, good size. So very intriguing prospect. And I can't put him ahead of the Blue Bloods at the top, but it would be very exciting to have him. You have a lot to work with.
It would be fun, that's for sure. The interesting thing about Meinerz is he's pretty much the only small school, highly touted small school draft pick at any position. And when I say that, I'm not talking about like somebody out of the MAC, which is, you know, that's a mid-level conference, or the Western Athletic Conference, or Conference USA. Not talking about, you know, Milton Williams kind of thing. That's not really a small school at all. I'm talking about Grand Valley State, Ferris State, you know, those kind of places. You know, at Wisconsin Whitewater it's the school that stands out among all the names that are on the top of any draft board this year, because people have Power Five tape to watch. Those guys completed their season. These small conferences all called it off for good reason. And Meinerz is just that really rare breed of cat who broke through that and still got a chance at the Senior Bowl.
He is. And I felt bad because I'm looking, they're saying ultra successful Division III program, six national titles, four runners up, and I'd never heard of them. So it's like, wait a minute, what am I watching here? But yes, I it's hard not to like Meinerz. And you know, you figure he has a lot of room to grow being at a school like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he's already at the level that he showed at the Senior Bowl and his athletic numbers.
Yeah, I agree, especially in terms of room to grow, because I guess they're watching tape from his freshman year. Because that's all that but they're watching tape from a while back now. If you complain about his agility, And you know, well, it's just not the best feed of all. It's not consistent with the testing. So probably there are some learned components there that weren't coached very well at Wisconsin Whitewater. It's possible that hearing that they have all these national championships, that's a good thing. But watching other places like East Mississippi play on last chance U, you know, you can still get some pretty crappy coaches beyond the head coach at schools like that.
It's very true. Very true. Yeah.
All right. So let's see. That was your, I have him number 7 on my list. Still like him, but he's the last guy in the second round for me. So my next guy already went to Creed Humphrey, was my number 5 guy. So let's go to your number 6 guy, right?
And this is the guy that gets my green star, gold star, red star. This is a my guy, I guess. And that's Kendrick Green from Illinois. And what I like about Kendrick Green, well, first of all, the game against Northwestern is where I kind of fell in love with him. I counted 4 pancakes. He had 1 on the first play. And for a guy, when you look at his size, he's 6'2", 305, 32 and a quarter arms. You know, this is why I consider him a my guy, because athletically, he does not look imposing. And he's going to slide down a lot of people's boards. I bet you I have him higher than a lot of people. But he has experience at center. He played 4 games there.
Yep.
33 consecutive starts, very quick, very mobile. He's got that wrestling background as a former wrestler. I love that because I understand the body control and the balance that it takes to exceed at that kind of level. And an easy sealer in this run game, which is so important. If you're talking about just walling off the blocking lane, mm-hmm. you don't have to be overpowering. He gets there. He can turn his hips like he's spinning around a street sign. It's just very, very natural to him. And that's my red star, gold star guy. I admit I'm higher on him than probably the rest of the drafting community is.
Okay. The 32 and a quarter inch arms bother me just a little bit because his ability to get that torque you're talking about on a defensive tackle and spin him is a lot on lockout with length. And so the way you defeat that, a couple of different ways. Violent hands is one way. You get the first contact on the guy and get him to not be turning his body normally. And he is the player at the NFL level who may have some problems with that. Still the number 9 guy on my list. I think he goes in the 3rd round. And I think he meets the Ravens' needs very distinctly in terms of being able to pull effectively with his kind of quickness. You know, he's up there. Think Justin Madubuike. That's about how quick this guy is. I think Justin Madubuike was 483. He's 489 in the 40. So right. Not a lot of difference there. And that's a player who certainly there's a lot to like. One thing that's brought up fairly often in scouting reports is some lunging in space. I don't like lunging, but it's not a big part of the Ravens screen game. And the Ravens, in terms of their pullers, generally are able to fix it. And there's a couple reasons. If you pull from left guard in the Ravens system, oftentimes you have to make a very easy block in the backfield on that edge player. So sometimes they leave him and sometimes they block him. If they block him, it's actually a pretty easy block. Your steps have to be good, but there, it is a pretty easy block. If you go to level 2, you know, then the Ravens coaching kicks in and they're pretty good about getting people to keep their feet, use their length well, and 32 and a quarter inch arms aren't a problem at all when you're up against linebackers and safeties. They're a problem going up against defensive linemen.
Yes, and when I imagine them in this scheme, it's left guard all day. Yep. When you're talking about getting there to block that defensive end, he's going to get there quicker than Bozeman does now. So if Bozeman can do it, he can do it, and he might give you an extra half yard to work with, the back an extra half yard to work with if he's needed, if things get pushed back in the middle. So Kendrick Green is admittedly a my guy. He moves very, very well, super quick. And like I said, the 4 pancakes, you go back and watch that Northwestern game. I mean, he's matched up against some bigger guys and he's holding his own. So I believe in him. I believe he could get stronger and be a complete player.
All right. So he's your number 6 guy, right? My number 6 guy, moving to the inside, Brady Christensen from BYU. A lot of people think he might stick at center, and I don't. I don't think it's even remotely possible, frankly. He's a guy I have moving inside with arms at 32 and a quarter also, despite the fact that he's 6'6". He had exceptional testing all across the board, so there's a high ceiling, I think, there in terms of what he can do. There's still a little bit of coaching that's going to have to go on. I don't think he's necessarily going to be an immediate high-level starter, but the people who want to plug him in at center, I think they have probably the right guy eventually. He is already 23 years old, so you've got a little bit of an age concern relative to some of the other non-redshirt juniors that are coming out now.
And I do like this player. He actually isn't on my list mainly because of the age. I think he's he seems like he's topped out, where some of these guys, and we spoke about earlier about the situation the Ravens have with the players already on their roster. To me, he's I don't know. I think what you see is what you get, but there is a lot to like about that player for sure.
Okay. All right. So I believe we've taken care of our top six. Who's your number seven guy? Because mine is Miners.
Okay. Yeah. This is where I have Wyatt Davis from Ohio State.
Okay.
He's a blue chipper and has he's actually Willie Davis's grandson, for those who are familiar with Willie Davis from the Packers. But he's a guy who is built well. He looks the part. He plays the part. Not the most mobile guy, but he looks for an early advantage, and he's very strong and aggressive. And he has that, if there is such a thing as production from the offensive line, he's a two-time All-American, and his aggressive nature is a lot of fun to watch. He was injured in the national championship game, so we don't have true testing numbers on him.
Right.
But he's a guy I'd be comfortable taking in that third round, like the cluster of these guys we have here.
It's an interesting choice, and I have him as number eight on my list, one behind Miners. So I think the third round is probably the place he starts to become a value. Whoever takes him, they're probably going to have to deal with the fact that he might not be available or might not be good in 2021. So they're going to have to deal with the fact that they're only going to get 3 years on that rookie contract. A lot of teams don't like that, so they just don't want to take the chance on an injured player. I think the Ravens might, because of their particular situation and their need coming up after this year, if, say, Bozeman were to walk, for example. And that would make a lot of sense for them to have a player like that. Some things he does technically tell me he might need a year of coaching anyway. I don't really see him as a great technician. I know he's given an All-American stance. I think he keeps his feet pretty well, but I don't really love a lot of other things technically about him. Not great at picking up blitzes every time. Not great necessarily about handing off on stunts. And it's okay at the college level. A lot of that's probably correctable. I just think there's multiple reasons why 2021 may not be a year where he's starting at guard in the NFL.
And the other negative that I had on him was he's not the quickest. Not the quickest lineman. I think if you cross his face, and maybe that has to do with recognition, but the blitzes and the twists and stunts and things like that, that's not his strong suit. But being a more physical, bigger, badder dude than the guy in front of him, he's got that in his favor.
Now, we talked about this a lot on the cornerback show, and I hear you kind of referring to it, so I just thought we'd go over this quickly. But, you know, when you talk about how you mirror an opponent, and this is true of offensive line, it's also true at cornerback, you know, some of that and some of how you get to the right place at the right time is reading the opponent's leverage, which I think it's actually it breaks down into a couple components. One is that you know from the tells that the opponent gives you, and some of that is probably coachable. What I think is less coachable is processing speed, which is what I think you're really talking about there, is how quickly do his eyes recognize what's happened and turn that into useful action. And think Muhammad Ali here and how quickly he'd be able to dodge out of the punches of pretty much anybody who was up against him, you know, before the suspension. Watch that Sonny Liston fight if you need to. Unbelievable at avoiding punches. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about an athlete who has incredible processing speed. Lamar has it in terms of reading leverage as well, in order to really force the other guy to miss, slow the game down in his own mind, and then take the action at exactly the right point, which is counter to that opponent. It's a question in Davis's case of whether or not he has that elite processing speed when you see some of the things happen on stunts, twists, and blitz pickups.
Yes, and the second move is the most important. When you're talking about Lamar, it's not just how quick he is. It's the fact that he can see what the other guy's doing, let him commit, and then counter. With Davis, he's not the second man because he's setting them up. He's the second man because it looks like he sees it a little late. And actually, there's another prospect coming up that I have the same questions about.
All right, so let's see. We're down to 1, 2, 3. I think it's your number 9 guy we're on right now.
Yeah, I had Carmen there, but the next guy on my list is Aaron Banks of Notre Dame.
Okay, I had Kendrick Green at number 9, so let's talk Aaron Banks.
Okay, hey, I would rank him a little bit higher if not for Zeitler being on the team, because I do see him as a really good fit for right guard. When you're talking about his size, his length, he plays to his size. He's got good control and balance. He's just very heavy-footed, limited in space. I think he's going to make a fine right guard for some team. But with the Ravens situation, unless they're willing to move Zeitler to left guard, I don't see a place for him as long as Zeitler's on the team. And the other thing that I liked about this player is he was the easiest evaluation that I had by far out of all these guys. I think if with Aaron Banks, if you look at 10 to 15 snaps from any game, that's pretty much what you're getting. He's a very consistently good player who took over for Quentin Nelson at Notre Dame.
Great point there, because when you watch guard tape in particular, that's what you want. Offensive line in general, but any interior offensive lineman, I'll expand that. You want boring play. You want a guy that just positionally gets himself in the right place. When you see pass reps, you don't want to see him get backed up too much. But if he does, at least you want to see him keep the body between that. You want to see footwork that's decent. But it's a relatively small set of times that guards get beat. So you want to see a whole lot of boring. It kind of reminds me of playing poker. What they say about playing No Limit Hold'em is it's hours of boredom and moments of terror. And that's what it really is. You go all in and you know, everything's on the line all of a sudden and you're down to a couple of cards. But that's kind of like what it is in guard. When you get beat for a very high value event.
It's very true. Yes. Aaron Banks has some very good boring tape. You said it. I would tell somebody, hey, all you need to do is watch 10, 15 snaps. That's what he looked like for, I want to say, 2+ games that I saw him.
All right. So my number 9 guy was Kendrick Green. So who's your number 10 guy?
Okay. Let's see who's next on the list here. This is a tough guy. And this is who I was talking about with, I don't see his recognition skills is what's holding him down. And that's Trey Smith from Tennessee. Now he has the blood clots in his lung issue, which is obviously very serious, but it looks like that they've gotten that straightened out. But that might scare some teams off. But he's very heavy-handed, has good length, great length, actually. He's almost 34-inch arms. He plays with a mean streak. There's a lot of pushing and shoving after the snap. My negatives on him was his body control. It's kind of all over the place. I saw him whiff on a couple of blocks. And with him not being the swiftest of athletes, if he is I believe he's a senior. Yeah, so you've got somebody with a lot of experience who's still as a senior. I see that the game looks like it moves a little too fast for him at times.
And that comes back to the issue of processing speed versus what they can teach him about tells. He's a raw prospect. I mean, there's a lot to still figure out about him, and maybe that's bad that he's still at this point in having it. I think he's the one who's had other medical concerns year to year other than the clots. Like he really hasn't, probably had the time to take an off-season coaching program at some point. To me, the guard size there is just perfect. His right. Metrics are off the charts. If the Ravens could somehow sneak in, get him low, it's another guy you'd really love to have. The Ravens are more likely to go, though, I think, in the other direction and find a guy that nobody likes because of their metrics, and they end up getting him in the 6th round, and the Ravens turn him into a decent lineman.
And just to add to your point, or to my point earlier, both of our points, he was all-freshman SEC. So this is a guy that's played for four seasons. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think that he's topped out, and it makes me think, well, hey, if he's seen all this football and I'm not seeing the recognition skills that I want, what's the chances it's going to get better at the NFL level? So although he looks like first guy off the bus type guard, I have him down there for that reason. I still think he's a third, fourth round pick. Yeah. He might even go higher. A team might want a guard with his size and fall in love with the measurables.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more likely in a year like this that he'll go in the third round. And that's where I think he probably ends up going, maybe the fourth. But the with so few small school prospects and so few total prospects that have gradable tape for 2020 in particular, I think it really increases the chance that he goes earlier. And I mean, if you look at the defensive line in this draft, huge number of opt-outs, fair number on the offensive side of the ball as well, of course. And that's not the guys who lost the season because their conference didn't play. It's the opt-outs. If teams have some programmatic ways to evaluate talent that said, we're going to put a 9.3 grade on this guy, but every guy who opted out, we're going to drop by 0.3 because we didn't like that component about it, or we don't want that risk. The Ravens are going to eat that up in terms of what they know and how they can judge better than other teams' programmatic formula for assigning negative grades to the opt-out.
I love it. And I mean, it starts all the way at the top with Penei Sewell. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's an opt-out. Rousseau, another player I want mm-hmm. to like. I want to like. But, you know, it's when you don't get to see him play football, and you, it's just tough. But, yes, it does set up well for the Ravens, who are true scouts, and their GM, Eric DaCosta, is a scout at heart. So, you know, it's where you rely on him. You would think, hey, if it's a fight with one hand tied behind our backs, the Ravens are going to do pretty well in the scouting.
All right. How about a couple of guys that we didn't talk about in our top 10s, and Trey Swift is also number 10 for me, that you maybe you think are worth a consideration, and not the full scouting report, but
sure.
Just
real fast, because I know we're running out of time. The two guys that I have left off, one is a mountain of a man, Deonte Brown. He's 350 pounds and plays to that size. So it's a compliment. Like, what you see is what you get from him. He's not going to move around. But when you say, oh, he's good to run blocking, or he can move people around, no, Deonte Brown can move, will move NFL players around. So athletically limited, but a player that you can't deny. If you're in a run-heavy scheme, he's going to make somebody happy, especially if you're not running a lot of zone. And then the second guy is Dave Moore from Grambling State, a guy I really like. He plays quicker than what his athletic scores indicate. There's a lot to work with him coming from Grambling, but he's another powerful player, plays with a mean streak. You would love his punch. He had some work as a center at the Senior Bowl, and his mistakes seem coachable to me. So two completely different players there, Brown and what you see is what you get, and Dave Moore is a developmental player where I could see us drafting him, stashing him, and seeing what we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that possibility will exist again this year. Deonte Brown, in terms of some elements, reminds me a little bit of Michael Oweno from last year. And, you know, the angst it gave me to see Bredesen drafted at 143 and him go at 182 to the Patriots of all teams.
Right.
You know, the only way it would have been worse is if he got to the Steelers for that kind of a relative value. Okay. Now, I don't think there's that sort of, that Deonte Brown belongs in the third round necessarily, but he's a guy I would love to see as a day three pick for the Ravens. I think he'd be a great choice. So that'd be an exciting one. Let me get to my other two guys, because I think one of them has been a guy who's been kicked pretty hard down the boards of a lot of teams. And I think he does deserve some of that. But Jalen Mayfield of Michigan is a guy I think he's not going to stick a tackle. So he's going to have to move to guard. That takes away a lot of his value. All of a sudden, a lot of the things that he does well are no longer as important on the inside. And I think he probably deserves to go still top of the fourth round, maybe late in the third round if you're being real generous, but I don't think he's gone before then, and I don't think people will assume that he can play tackle at the NFL level. So he might be a guy that the Ravens could derive value from. Certainly if he falls any more than that, I'd be all over the him as a value pick. Robert Hainsey of Notre Dame, another guy kicking in from tackle to play guard, I think almost certainly in the NFL. Both of the Notre Dame tackles had very short arms. I had Eichenberg as staying at the position, but Hainsey, I think, moves inside and plays guard as a pro. If the Ravens took a chance on him in the fourth round, the fifth round, I think that would be okay. I'm not thrilled with the pick. I think there are other better guys, but you got to start looking at who's left over at that point.
And without giving a scouting report, there's one more name that I would have really liked to talk about, and that's Jalen Moore from Western Michigan. He's a college tackle, left tackle, I think, and he got some work inside at the Senior Bowl, and a guy that's really fun to watch, another one of those developmental. So I got two Moores, Dave Moore, Jalen Moore, as my developmental sleeper picks. Well, I guess mid-round can't be, or early day three wouldn't be a sleeper, but guys that are less known that I think would fit really well in with the Ravens.
All right. One fun thing to do, guys, make sure you check in after day two of the draft, maybe after day one, day two, both, and try and see who Jason is projecting for the next day value picks for the Ravens, because that's always a lot of fun. I encourage everybody to try and do that, to look at your own board and really say, who would you be real happy with if the Ravens got in any of the picks that they had today? And maybe you feel a little bit better about the draft. Last year for me, it was Geno Stone, and the Ravens ended up getting in the seventh round. In 2018, it was Deshaun Elliott that I was real excited about getting when it happened in the sixth round. But, you know, some good names come off still on day three that have high ceilings and a lot of opportunity for the Ravens draft acumen to show through.
And what I would suggest to the fans out there is that, just like last year and just like many times, actually, do not, if the Ravens pick someone with their first or second pick, do not automatically just throw the rest of the players that you have there way down the board. They will double up. They doubled up on linebacker last year. Harrison was actually, I'm a huge Harrison fan, but he was actually sitting alone there at the board when we picked him. I was extremely happy. And same thing with Mark Andrews after the Hayden Hurst pick. Mm-hmm. I moved him a little bit, but I couldn't move him that far down because he was just that good of a player. So when you're resetting your board, think about the Ed Dixon, Dennis Pitta. The Ravens will double up at a position. So just because we draft a edge rusher, say, or a wide receiver in the first round, doesn't mean that you just want to throw the other ones back. You will adjust accordingly. But yes, it's my favorite time of year, Ken. Aside from Sundays, I love getting to know these guys and then watching them, you know, their true stories, true Hollywood stories play out in the NFL. And, you know, when you're playing another team, hey, I remember that guy, this, that, you know, I know he's a strong guy. Okay, we got this guy. So, just a lot of fun talking with you. I'm glad to be here, and it's long overdue. I feel like everybody's ready for the draft at this point. We could draft tomorrow.
Always a pleasure, Jason, to have you on the show, and in particular when we're talking about the football new year. I want to talk to other folks there. Make sure you go out. We've had a number of draft shows previewing, I think, 9 different positions now. They're all out there. The guests have been outstanding. So take a listen and see what's there. There's another good draft valuation chart show from at PFF Brad, who talks about the Fitzgerald Spielberger methodology, which creates a much flatter set of valuations. It's based on the second contract. He's got some very interesting thoughts. The results of that are perhaps a little bit counterintuitive, and you may feel that way, but don't discount what he's saying otherwise with using that information and take a look at it. And anyway, I really have had a lot of fun in draft season. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
And I would just wanted to thank you. And yes, you know, I have a small community of friends that I associate with on Twitter and YouTube. And one of the things that motivated me to get out onto Twitter was, hey, I can talk to people like Ken and other really football fanatics that love it as much as I do. So I appreciate everything, and I'm very appreciative to be on the show.
All right. Loved having you, Jason. And we'll talk to you next time on All right. Film Study.
Thank you, Ken.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.